There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me as always, Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
What's crack-a-lackin', nephew?
You are so street, yo.
Yeah, you know.
I just wanted to start off the show here real quickly with kind of a cool little announcement. I would like to make an announcement that we have another trip, actually two trips that we're working on right now. One is going to be for the middle part of December, and we're trying to finalize and see what we can do, but the trip will be to Rhode Island again, where we're going to go to the Haunted Hotel. We're going to hang out with the TAPS group, as many people as I can get involved in the event, and we're going to be able to investigate the Haunted Hotel, check out TAPS headquarters, and have some great celebrity guests that'll be there to hang out with us and do the investigation. That's going to be around the second weekend in December is what we're shooting for, so please keep tuned to the radio show. Also, check out our website at darknessradio.com or check us out on the MySpace, where I always throw up bulletins there as well. And if you go to MySpace, just look up Darkness Radio. We'll be there for you. I believe it's also, what is it, MySpace.com/TheDarkNightDJ. So that's the way to locate us there. The second trip that we're working on, I've got more information on. Tentatively, right now, the guests that we have lined up are the beautiful ladies of TAPS. We've got Lisa and Donna are going to be joining us for the investigation.
Hey,
that's right. We're also going to be joined by Chris Fleming from the TV show Dead Famous and a brand new addition who just signed on with us to do this, and I'm excited to have him coming aboard with us, Mr. Patrick Burns, who is the paranormal investigator from the TV show Haunting Evidence on Court TV Wednesday nights at 10:30 Central, or I'm sorry, 10:30 Eastern time, I believe. So he'll be joining us as well on the trip, and we're going to be going out and investigating the historic and haunted Queen Mary. That's right, for those of you that saw it on the TAPS episode, and I'm sure if you check out Dead Famous, you recognize that Chris also did an investigation there. So we're going to be going there with people that have investigated on TV, talk about their experiences there, and actually get to see it for ourselves. We're going to be doing a great little trip, have a bunch of other great celebrity guests that will be joining us along the way. And we're also going to be working on other trips and events throughout the year. As a matter of fact, we're trying to lock one down for Chicago so we can get out there to the Midwest and meet with everybody and have everybody come on out and meet TAPS members and all of our celebrity guests. And while we're out there, hopefully we're going to all get a chance to hang out with our next guest for us this evening on the show. Calling in from Illinois, we've got a gentleman who I look up to as a paranormal investigator. He's an author of over 41 books on history and the paranormal, and was probably one of the first books I ever read about the paranormal in Illinois area. His name is Mr. Troy Taylor. Troy, thank you very much for joining us on the show this evening.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing great. I appreciate you being here with us. Troy, your books are some of the books that got me started in reading into the paranormal, and I really enjoy the books that you've come out with.
Oh, cool. And well, that's always good. I mean, I love to hear that from people, you know, especially, you know, people who pick up something about Illinois, you know, because home state, you know.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
I hear that a lot with, like, the Ghost Hunter's Guidebook. You know, they
right.
say, oh, yeah, I picked up the guidebook. And it really got me started, and I'm like, well, have you picked up the new one? Because, you know, it's one of those things I keep updating because you know how that stuff changes all
the time.
Oh, no
doubt.
So, you know.
As a matter of fact,
I think
what we'll do is when we do the trip out to Chicago, we're going to we'll include a copy of your Ghost Hunter's Guidebook. We'll purchase copies for all of the members that attend for that trip. So everybody will get a copy of Troy's book, and we'll see if maybe we can even get him to sign them for you as well.
Oh, yeah, well, of course.
And then, Troy, you've also got tours that you do out in Chicago, and you've got a brand-new tour company that you just kicked off, so why don't we talk about that real quickly?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Last year I did a book for Barnes & Noble called Weird Illinois, and it's part of the Weird U.S. series that Mark and Mark with Weird New Jersey started a couple of years ago, about the same time. My book was actually the first one in the series after Weird U.S., and you know, I kept thinking, you know, there's got to be a way to do something with this, because it's a, I don't know if you've ever picked up any of the weird books, but they're...
I picked up a lot of weird
books. Yeah, well, yeah, you know, exactly.
What is
right.
it? There's weird Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, yeah, there's weird, you know, there's weird Wisconsin, weird New England, weird Ohio.
Right, weird Ohio is the other
New
one
York,
I've got, right.
Florida, California. Uh-huh. I mean, it just, the list keeps growing. In fact, I just did sections for weird Virginia. So, I mean, that's there's a lot of them still coming out. But the books are a real mixture of stuff. We always call them local legends and best kept secrets of whatever state it is, because
sure.
the stuff is so very, I mean, it's so weird. I mean, it's just unusual stuff. I mean, it's lots of ghost stuff, what we call the roads less traveled, which are, you know, like mostly haunted highways, haunted bridges, stuff like that. But then, I mean, it can be anything from ghost stories to, you know, giant plastic lumberjacks on the side of the road. You know what I mean? I mean, it can just be anything. And you
that
know,
happens
it was
to be one
a...
of Tim's biggest fears.
Yeah.
Giant plastic
well,
lumberjacks.
That. Oh, yeah, you guys are from West, yeah,
Minnesota. Yeah,
right?
We got big
so,
Paul Bunyan up here.
Yeah, you've got Paul Bunyan around. So, yeah, but see, that would fit into the weird Minnesota book because it's just, it's strange.
Yes, it is.
So I kept thinking there's got to be a way to do something with this, you know, this weird stuff. And I had been working with a ghost tour company. And rather than just ghosts, we decided to do something with the weird Illinois stuff. And we decided to do the weird Chicago stuff, which is, it's still a ghost tour.
Sure.
But it also encompasses a lot of other things. I mean, I can't not do a ghost tour. I mean, you know.
Right.
I've written a lot of books about ghosts, and
yep.
that's my thing. You know, that's really my, you know, my interest. And so what we've done is combine it with ghosts, crime. We do a lot of crime stuff, and Chicago is obviously a great place to do that.
Sure.
There's a lot of great crime sites. I mean, I said that sounds terrible, but I think your audience will understand what I mean by great crime sites. You know, it's like having a favorite serial killer. You know what I mean? I mean
that the Jeffrey Dahmer rocks.
I know. It sounds terrible when you say it, but you know, but usually people that I'm talking to when
right.
I say it, they understand what I mean. So.
Right.
Hopefully everybody kind of got that. But, you know, there's a lot of great crime stuff. And so we've combined all of that into one tour. You know, our tour can be anything from, you know, ghost spots to crime spots to our favorite place in town to get a great hot dog. I mean, it can be just, it's just crazy stuff.
Portillo's.
But, yeah,
Portillo's.
Well, I don't know. You know, you know, you'd have to talk to my buddy Adam who does this tour with me because he actually has an entire website where he is trying every hot dog in Chicago, and so in rating them. So yeah, you'd have to talk to him on that. He can give you more information. But,
very cool.
but you know, it's just so we're just you know we're just getting it rolling. I mean, we just launched it last Tuesday. So
now, do you have a website up for the tours as well?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. WeirdChicago.com.
WeirdChicago.com.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that, I mean that pulls up. And if you go to our main website, the one you guys have got linked from your website, the Prairie Ghost website, mm-hmm. you can get anywhere. Our stuff. But.
And you've written books like, what is it, Haunted Illinois, The Ghost Hunter's Guidebook, Weird Illinois. Like I said, you've done over 41 books on history and the paranormal, so you've got quite a bit out there.
Yeah, I mean, I write a couple of different kinds of books. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I do write, like, guidebooks, like the Ghost Hunter's Guidebook and the, you know, Ghosts on Film and Haunted, you know, the Field Guide to Haunted Graveyards and that kind of stuff. But then I also do, you know, which I always think of that we call them our Haunted Field Guide series. They're more of our tech-type books. But then I do a lot of books that are, I just gather, you know, history and hauntings, like Haunted Illinois and Haunted Chicago and, you know, The Haunting of America and, you know, Season of the Witch on the Bell Witch and that kind of stuff. You
now,
know,
if people are interested in your books, which I know they're going to be after hearing you tonight, where can they go order the books?
They go right to the Prairie Ghosts website, which is just, it's Ghosts of the Prairie, and it's at prairieghosts.com.
Okay.
And everything is on there.
I mean,
you know.
And
you can
also buy them on Amazon and Borders.
Oh, you
and
can.
Beat Alton,
sure,
right?
You can do that too. Yeah.
But it makes more sense to buy direct from.
Well,
Troy.
you get them autographed if you buy them from us.
Awesome.
Because everybody they set them aside for me and I sign them before they go out. So.
How much more to have you put some lipstick on and kiss the cover?
Usually, for you, Dave, nothing.
Oh, Troy. Aw, that's so sweet. Now let's find out a little bit more about you. What got you involved? I know when you were young, did you grow up in a haunted house yourself?
No. Actually, you know, it was just something I always had an interest in. And that always sounds so lame when you say it, because everybody, you know, they always want me to, you know, say, you know, my mom died when I was 12 and she started haunting our house. And, you know, I like to tell that when my mom is there, you know, seeing me speak somewhere. She does really loves that. But no, you know, really, I never had any kind of experiences of any kind until I was in high school. And but I'd maintained an interest in it since I was, you know, gosh, probably, I can remember being back in like second and third grade buying the true ghost stories out of the Weekly Reader, you know.
Sure.
And so I always had an interest in it, and I maintained it into high school. And, you know, my friends all knew I had an interest. My teachers oftentimes would give me like newspaper clippings they ran across. My senior year in high school, the big deal was the Tina Resch poltergeist case in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
And I had newspaper clippings brought into me by my teachers, you know, like, hey, I know you're interested in this stuff, you know.
Oh, that's very
I think they
cool.
were just happy I was reading, you know, something, you know. But everybody knew I had a thing, and so, you know, my Halloween nights were usually spent, like, driving my friends around to all of the local haunted places like that. I mean, so I started my tour business, you know, very early, you know, for free, but it really wasn't until I was in high school. I had a weird experience at a graveyard that I'd heard was really haunted. My friends and I had gone out there one night to check it out, just, you know, because the big dare was to walk from one side of the cemetery to the other and then get in your car and leave. And everybody looks at me like, yeah, big deal. And I go, no, you don't understand.
Right.
This cemetery was really, really, really creepy. And well, anyway, we went out there one night, first time I'd ever gotten out there, and we parked the car, we walked across the cemetery, got to the other side, we're walking back, and the headlights on the car went out. And again, you think, oh, must have been the battery or something. You know, well, we had all the doors locked. When we got to the car, we found out that the headlight button had been physically pushed in.
Wow.
And, yeah, we piled in the car, and I, you know, honestly, I didn't go back to the cemetery for 10 years after, seriously, 10 entire years before
that,
I ever went back.
Was that Bachelor's Grove?
No, it was actually a place called Peck Cemetery.
Wow.
In central Illinois. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Very cool.
And it's one of those places that you don't want your battery to die.
Yeah,
I
no
mean, you really don't want your battery to die. So, you know, we were a little freaked out about that. But that was really the first experience that I'd have that I really couldn't explain. And that really was to the point where I thought, you know what, you know, maybe there is something to all this. I mean, I'd always thought, you know, there probably is, but, and I'd always been interested in it, but that was the first really concrete thing that had ever happened to me that I thought, you know what, I'm gonna see what I can do with this. The only other thing really that got me going to what I do is when I was about, I don't know, 12 or 13, I had picked up a copy of a book, and I always credit this book, called Haunted Houses by a guy named Richard Weiner, who to my entire life, I've never met, and I've always wanted to meet this guy, and I'm always afraid that if I ever do, I'll be disappointed. But I picked this book up, and I read the back, and it's like, you know, every story in this book is true. I mean, that's what it says at the top. I mean, I'm looking at my copy. It's sitting here on the shelf in my
right.
office. And it's like, you know, I picked this book up, and I read this book, and I said to my mom, I said, man, this is so cool. This guy travels around the country and writes about haunted houses for a living. And, of course, she rolled her eyes and, you know, oh, no one does that for a living, you know, and that was the end of that. And I think she still thinks that, you know, no one really does that for a living. But, you know, after all this time, I think she's finally realized, wait a minute, I think my son actually has an actual career doing this stuff.
My son is a doctor. Trey's a doctor.
That's probably what she tells people, yeah. But anyway, so I, you know, I credit that book with thinking, you know, I looked at it and I said, man, can somebody really do this for a career? And, you know, now, what am I, 20 some years later, I'm actually doing it as a career. And, you know, I would never trade it for anything. I mean, I honestly think that I'm the luckiest guy in the world. People always ask me, you know, how do you get into doing this for a living? And I go, well, you know, it's not always easy, because if you're one of those people that you really, really got to know where your next meal is coming from,
right,
probably not the job for you. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to kind of take a chance, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it is. It's a blast.
Well, I can honestly say, as corny as it's about to sound, that after reading your books, you pretty much inspired me to do the same type of thing.
Well, that's good.
You know, it's
glad.
Reading that and thinking, boy, if he can do it, anybody can. I mean, no.
Yeah, that's what you meant. You read it and you went, what a piece of crap.
No,
and when, you know,
you've got great books. You've got fantastic books. No, but it did. It helped to inspire me to think, you know, boy, this is, you know, and they all say, find something that you love and then make a career out of it. And that's what we've been working on with the radio station and doing our paranormal trips and doing stuff. So it's, and we definitely have a fascination with the paranormal and learning more. But it's, you know, great authors like you that are able to put these things together for us to read and, you know, kind of inspire. So I appreciate it myself personally. So I think, you know, thank you for the work.
Honestly, when I put a book together, I don't do it with the idea of, you know, boy, I hope this inspires somebody. Or, you know, actually, I don't even put a book together, and, you know, my wife would kill me if she heard me say this, but I don't even put a book together with the idea that anybody's going to buy it. I put a book together about something that I'm interested in.
Right.
That's all I write about, is something I'm interested in. I did a book earlier this summer on the St. Louis exorcism case, you know, with the idea of, you know, I don't even care if anybody buys this book, but I've been interested in it, and I've been researching it for 10 years now, and I've got to get this off my chest.
Sure.
You know, I've got to get this thing out of my head. And so, you know, I just wrote the book and hoped that people bought it. Well, I mean, thankfully they did, but it was still a case of where if you start writing stuff with the idea of I'm going to do this for the money, or it's just like doing these tours. I mean, any kind of tours. I mean, I've got tours in Chicago and Decatur and Springfield and Alton all over Illinois, and you can't go start doing a tour with the idea of I'm going to make big money doing this, because you're not. I mean, maybe nobody's going to come, for one thing. You got to do it because you enjoy it,
no doubt.
You love it. It's just like, you know, Vince Wilson, my buddy Vince, will tell you he's one of those great guys who thought it was a great idea to put together a ghost conference. I put together a ghost conference back in 1997. I think we were just pretty much the first ones to do it, you know what I mean? And I mean, I'm sure there were other conferences of sorts, but the ghost conference thing was one of the first ones we did, and we didn't do it for the money. We did it because we thought it would be fun, and luckily people came, and it, you know, it got onto the AP wire.
Very cool.
You know, I spent like 2 days, nothing but radio interviews for like 2 days before the conference, because people were like, what the hell is this? You know what I mean? And so people just couldn't get a handle on what it was we were trying to do. And, you know, and then, of course, since then, I mean, there are conferences, you know, all the time. There's always conferences popping up. But, you know, we always tell people, don't do this thing because you think that it's going to be a huge moneymaker.
Right.
You know, I always say people get that Little Rascals mentality. Remember the Little Rascals?
Oh, sure.
Spanky and Alfalfa, and they'd go, hey, let's put on a show.
Uh-huh.
And they'd put on a show. Well, a lot of people get that same idea of a conference. Hey, let's put on a show, and we're going to make big money putting on this conference. I mean, honestly, I've heard stories of people, you know, banking on putting together a big conference and literally mortgaging their home to do it and losing their home. It's a true story.
Unbelievable.
Lost their home putting together a conference because it just fell apart.
Mm.
You know, so all this stuff, when you do this stuff.
Tim learned that lesson the hard way doing the Mork and Mindy conventions.
Manu, baby.
He just, he lost his pants.
But,
lost, you know,
everything.
It's all right.
Yeah, so you got to do it because you love it. You know, that's all there is to it. As I think I'm preaching to the choir with
you
guys,
no doubt.
I think, but,
hey, I got a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Caitlin from our live chat and board, who's listening right now, wanted to know if anything else had happened while you were in that cemetery besides the lights going off. Did you hear any sounds, see anything?
Oh, man. No, we weren't there long enough. The headlights on the car went out.
Uh-huh.
And we decided that, well, I mean, we had gotten, really, honestly, we'd walked across the cemetery. I mean, it's a spooky old place, but it was kind of like, yeah, okay, you know, this is just another urban legend. There's no, you know, there's no ghosts here. We're halfway back across the cemetery when the headlights go out. And so it's like, okay, so is this place haunted or not? I mean,
Right. Because
it was one of those places that's supposed to be, you know, like all, and this, keep in mind, this was the 80s, so everything that was abandoned and supposed to be haunted was, of course, infested with Satanists. You know, remember that, era, right?
Oh, yeah, Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
Exactly.
That's all they ever talked about.
Same kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, we heard about how these guys in black robes patrolled the cemetery with axes, you know, waiting for, you know, unwitting teenagers to wander in. And so, I mean, the question then was, do we stay out here in the cemetery, which may be haunted with the ghosts,
right,
or do we run back to the car where there are undoubtedly Satanists with axes waiting for us? You know, so you know what? I didn't see or hear anything else. We went straight back to the car, and you know, we're going to jump in, but then we're thinking, well, wait a minute, do we really want to jump in?
Right.
And so my buddy who owned the car, we made him go look in the car. And that's when we found out that the headlight button had been pushed in. And
hey, Tim,
honestly, we left.
We just found out who the guy with the red shirt from their Star Trek group was. Send him into the event. You go check it out, Ensign Smith.
That's exactly right. You go take a look at your car kind of thing. We're going to stand over here.
Live long and prosper.
And you know, so...
Well, for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest right now is Mr. Troy Taylor, and he's an author of over 41 books regarding the paranormal and history all over the United States and talking about different hauntings. He was just talking to us a little bit about a book that he's been worked on about the St. Louis exorcism, and I'd like to talk to him about that, and we have a lot of questions coming in for that as well. We'll do that right after this.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Me llamo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
You have an interest in the unknown. Want to know more about the paranormal? Come and join us in Para Investigators, the 24/7 online paranormal chat. Visit us today at InfinityParanormal.com and tell us what's been keeping you up in the dark.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
If it weren't for ghosts and aliens, these guys wouldn't be getting any action at all.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is Mr. Troy Taylor, and Troy is the author of over 41 books regarding different aspects of the paranormal and history. He's also a paranormal investigator and a tour operator, so if you're going to be out in the Windy City and you're looking for a good time on a weekend, give Troy a call. His number's written in every bathroom wall. No, I'm just kidding. But you can give him a call. You can check out his website, which is weirdchicago.com, correct?
Well, that's for the
tour site.
That's one for the Chicago tours. Yeah.
Right, and then if you want, all your stuff is right at your site at prairieghosts.com, right?
Absolutely,
okay,
yeah.
So they can go check everything out there. All right, good deal. And before we went to the break, we were talking to Troy. We have some questions that are popping in from the live chat room that we have going on during the show, so we'll get to those as we're moving through. A couple of the people wanted to know more about the book that you've done regarding the St. Louis exorcism. For those of us that don't know the story, can you fill us in and tell us a little bit about it? And is that book out currently?
Oh, yeah, it's out. It's awesome. It's a book called The Devil Came to St. Louis.
Okay.
I love that song.
Yeah, that was Charlie Daniels, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's Charlie Daniels' brother.
Excellent.
It's a little different. You know, I can give you the story in a nutshell because it's, I mean, this is like the most convoluted, confusing. There's a reason that this story takes an entire book to tell because there's just so much stuff that happened and so many myths involved with it. Just to kind of get you started on it is the story of there was a boy in 1949 who lived in Maryland who was believed to have been possessed. His relatives brought him to St. Louis where an exorcism was performed. Interestingly, this story, when it made the newspapers in the summer of 49 in the Washington, D.C. area, which is where he was actually picked up by a future author whose name was William Peter Blatty, who became fascinated with the story and turned it into The Exorcist, the book and the film. So this is really the story, the true story that inspired the movie that, of course, we've all seen at this point or have all read the book. But the boy was brought to St. Louis, where there was a pretty good documentation. About a 26-page single-spaced diary was put together by one of the priests, the Catholic priests who was involved in the exorcism, detailing everything that happened from the very beginning of the case to kind of really poltergeist activity that was going on in this boy's house. And as things progressed, some of the local ministers sent him over to the Catholic Church saying, you know, I don't know how to handle this, but the Catholics do. And they believe that he might be possessed.
Give
right
it to the Catholics.
And so he ended up in St. Louis where things became more violent. You know, things were shaking. There were banging on the walls. The boy was going into, like, these trances, these kind of fits, where he would literally just black out but would continue acting out, talking, speaking, you know, vile things that he said and did while he was in these trance states. Was very violent, was able to, with his eyes closed normally, completely unconscious, able to hit people. He broke one of the priest's involved's nose at one point. He was hurling and spitting up like big wads of mucus. No green soup or anything like that. Not quite. His head never spun around. He never levitated off the bed. But what's fascinating about
the story? What an underachiever.
Yeah, exactly. What's so fascinating about the story is that there was only, he unfortunately passed away last year, but there was only one priest still involved who was involved in the case who was alive. He had actually been a seminary student, kind of in training to become a Jesuit priest at the time. His name was Walter Halloran. And Father Halloran had been interviewed, I don't know how many, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of times. And I was able to get a hold of him. I called him up, and I said, listen, this is what I'm working on. I've been working on it for about 10 years, and I'm really trying to find out what was true and what wasn't. I said, because there's a lot of myth going around about this case. And I thought, well, he's going to tell me, you know, well, I've talked about this 100 times. Instead, he was like, you know what? He said, I'd love to get a chance to sit down and talk to you. So I interviewed him actually 4 different times before he passed away and really got some great stories from him. And he would say, you know, when you would say, well, you know, did he ever, you know, really levitate off the bed? No, you know, he never levitated. So, you know, that's not true at all. But one time the bed actually lifted up off the floor. And I mean, he would very innocuously say, you know, oh, but this happened. You know, I mean, he was such a great guy.
Wow.
And he really offered some great detail. In fact, I mean, as I went through the book, I would actually stop the narrative and say, okay, according to Walter Halloran, this is what actually happened. A lot of people believe this is what happened, but that's not what happened. This is. And so it was a really, I hate to even say fun book, because it's a very dark. I don't think I've ever written anything quite this dark before.
Okay.
And people will ask me, and I don't want to give away the entire book, but everybody wants to know, well, was he really possessed? Well, and here's my answer. I don't know. What I can tell you is that something happened in this case. Something, and I would even go as far as to say something paranormal occurred. I'm not convinced. I'm not sure still if I believe in possession. However, there was some weird stuff that went on. I mean, I will tell you, though, that when the exorcism was performed, it was officially granted by the Archdiocese of St. Louis. However, and even Father Halloran would tell you, as an assistant in the case, it really didn't meet all the criteria of an actual possession. There is actually, that the Catholic Church actually has a set of standards that a possession has to reach before it really can be considered a true possession. And this case never did. It did have some very strange things, and it did have some aspects of a real possession according to their criteria.
Well, does the criteria have to do with the, you know, does possession always have to be demonic?
Well, right. Well, and I agree with you. I mean, I agree. But looking at this from a Catholic viewpoint and saying, did it meet the standards? No, technically it didn't. But the priest who was in charge, who was the head of all this, he honestly believed the boy was possessed. In fact, to the day he died, believed that the boy was possessed. And Father Halloran was very close with this man, and really felt that, you know, he knew what he was doing. You know, he knew what he was talking about, so he was involved and he stayed involved. And he kind of, I think he and I were in agreement in the fact that something really weird happened in this case. I mean, this family moved, I mean, picked up this guy at the jeopardy of his job. I mean, back in those days, his wife didn't work, but took their son out of school, let them move halfway across the country. He spent most of his time away from his job, jeopardized his entire job, his home, his career, because he felt that this boy could best be served, you know, going through this exorcism in St. Louis. And there's no way that anybody would have just, on a lark, moved halfway across the country and said, oh, yeah, well, you know, this is, I'm sure he's not really possessed, but we'll see what happens. Something was going on. Something really happened. I also had the chance to, once it was all over, while I was still working on the book, actually had a chance to talk with the boy, who is, to this day, his identity has been kept secret. Wow. And, yeah, you can find it. If you really look hard, I mean, it was really not that hard to find, but I did it tracing property records out of St. Louis. I was able to find and match it up. And I found the kid. Well, he's not a kid anymore, obviously. Right. But, you know, I
wow,
found
that
the
would
guy.
Be paranormal.
Yeah, that would really
Hi,
be weird.
Troy.
Yeah. But I did take the chance to talk to him. But he maintains to this day, and was actually very polite, but had no interest in talking with me, which is understandable, but because he just doesn't do interviews. But he will say that, you know, I can't tell you what happened because I don't remember any of it. And he's always maintained to this day that he does not remember anything that happened during about a four-month period when he was possessed. Does not remember anything.
Wow.
So,
that's kind of like my college experience.
Yeah, exactly. I had it. Yeah, I lived in Mexico for a while. I don't remember a lot of that. So,
can you be possessed by a beer bong?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, but it was, you know, it's an interesting case. It's completely, to this day, you know, completely unexplained. It's unsolved. And I think that's one of the things that appealed to me about it in the first place. But,
and again, the
I
name of that book is
The Devil Came to St. Louis.
The Devil Came to St. Louis, and that is available at your website.
Yes.
At prairieghosts.com.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And we have a question here. Actually, one of the people from the board wanted to know, you're writing a book with David Rodriguez? From Prism, is that correct?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay.
No, like David's you? A great guy.
Okay.
I like David. I wonder where that may have come from. David is actually featured prominently in a book I did called So There I Was with a friend of mine.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, and David is mentioned in the book. I had done an investigation at the Villisca axe murder house with David back in May of 2005. And he got some really great video when we were there that time at that night, and so David is featured in the book, but yeah, I don't think we're not writing it together.
Yeah, let's talk about that book a little bit, because that's kind of an interesting book, and it's a little bit different than the historical and haunted yeah. books that you've done. Tell people a little bit about the new book.
Well, that So There I Was is actually a continuation of a book I did a few years ago called Confessions of a Ghost Hunter, which was, the title is obviously an homage to Harry Price, who did another book back in his day called Confessions of a Ghost Hunter. And since I've always wanted to grow up to be Harry Price, I thought, well, you know, and I put that in the front of the book. This is dedicated to Harry Price. And the book was really about experiences. That particular book, Confessions, was actually a book of experiences doing investigations, real-life things that happen, mostly stupid things that I had done, you know, because everybody goes, well, where do you get your ideas for, like, the Ghost Hunter's Guidebook? How do you know that's worthwhile to put in there? Well, I know it's worthwhile because I screwed up so many times that this is the only thing that worked, you know. So that's
don't
what that
get
book
high
is about.
Before you go
exactly.
on an investigation.
You know, don't get drunk and, you know. But and so it was really a lot about things that just went wrong, you know, and,
sure.
and it was pretty funny. And I do a kind of a presentation, a lecture thing on it, and it's really just kind of humorous anecdotes. So I wanted to do another one, not just on investigations, but also with a lot of these overnight trips that we do, you know,
sure.
Because people are under the impression that it's all just entertainment, and it's like, it's not, because, you know, we're in the middle of doing investigations, and yeah, a lot of times some really weird stuff happens. So I had asked my friend Len Adams, who it runs my tours for me in Alton, Illinois, down by St. Louis,
okay.
if he had some stories, and he's like, oh yeah, I got tons of stories of stuff that's happened on the tours, so, you know, I think people would really be interested. So we kind of both put together kind of funny things that had happened, and we kind of alternated chapters with it. And the title is actually sort of a joke because so there I was is this thing that we always say that we always say whenever something weird happens,
right.
And we always go, so there I was, you know, my back against the wall, you know, kind of thing. And so I said, man, we're going to use that as a title for the book. So it's a fun book, and there's a piece in there by one of the guys who does the Alton Tours for us. His name's Luke Naliborski, and Luke wrote this piece about some filming that he and I did together for the Learning Channel a couple of years ago. And if you're not laughing out loud by the time you're done with this with this little clip, this piece that he wrote, then you need to get a sense of humor because it's really, really funny. And let's just say when it's done, you'll never look at my butt the same way again.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say.
Is that a promise, Troy?
That is a promise. I'm not kidding.
Excellent.
So.
Excellent. And that book is out right now
correct? Out. Yeah,
and it's the second part. Now, the first book is called Confessions of a Ghost Hunter?
Yes, yeah. That was kind of the initial book of the two. And that's kind of in our Haunted Field Guide series.
Sure.
And then the follow-up was So There I Was. So.
All right, good deal. Good deal. And those are both available through your website as well, so pick those up. Troy's a great writer. If you've had a chance to read any of his books, or if you haven't, pick up his books. They are a really neat little opportunity for you to get a glimpse into really neat boy. Can I use that word anymore? Boy, it's so groovy. He writes like the coolest, most boss books ever. But you've got a great style. You give a really good history to it and keep it entertaining, even though you're coming at it from a historical standpoint on a lot of your books.
Yeah,
I know there's
some
people.
History,
yeah,
you know,
some people just mix in so much of the history that it gets boring. But you really have a really nice mixture and combination.
Well, I tend to kind of pick and choose my history, though,
sure.
Because I always have all the pertinent stuff, but I really go for the weirdest stuff I can possibly find.
Awesome.
You know, because every historical story, I mean, you can take the Civil War and people will go, oh, my God, that bores the crap out of me. And I'll say, oh, no, wait a minute. You got to read this. You know, here's a guy who was, you know, found to be completely insane, illegally in court, and yet he was a commanding general at Gettysburg. And they're like, what? And I said, yeah, and he had his leg cut off afterward and visited in a museum, which he donated it to. And they're like, oh, you know,
it's
a whole, you know, there's a lot of stuff there.
Well, you're a great guy to have at a party, aren't you, Troy?
I am.
Full
you know,
of nuggets and knowledge. Hey, I got a quick question from Robin here on the boards. She wants to know if has anything ever followed you home from any of these investigations, and if so, how did you handle it?
You know, I've never had anything follow me home, but I actually bought a home that had a ghost, and I had heard the story.
Was it extra to get that?
No. Actually, they were more than happy to give it to me for no extra charge.
Wow.
And I had heard about the ghosts, but didn't really believe the story. It wasn't really until things started to happen that I actually believed the story. And that was the weird thing, is when stuff started disappearing and, you know, and things like that. I'm thinking, well, maybe there is something to this. And really, I handled it by not really doing anything at all. It was not, yeah, I mean, it really wasn't anything. It was kind of cool, you know, I mean, who doesn't, and when you're into this stuff, you know, and there are a lot of people who are going to say, oh, not me, but I always say when you're into this stuff, who doesn't want a house with a ghost in it?
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, but a lot of people are not that eager. I you'd be surprised at the number of people who you would think are really, you know, would be really eager to have a ghost in their house will say, not me.
Now, did you ever see the spirit?
No, I never saw it, but I had a thing. The ghost was supposed to be, and the story was, the ghost was a little boy who had actually died in the building. He had his father had been it used to be a bakery, and his father had been a manager at the bakery, and the boy had visited there often and had died and had stayed behind. Now, that was a story that I'd heard, and I didn't really, like I said, didn't really think much of it until, you know, I would be in the store and things would disappear, and I actually had, you know, like a little tug at the back of my shirt one day, turn around, there was nobody there. And that really wasn't, and that was just kind of, you know, minor stuff that was going on until my daughter came along, and all of a sudden her toys started to disappear on a regular basis. And she was little at the time. I mean, just, you know, was just starting to crawl and stuff. And, you know, we put her down this old building with all these wooden floors, put her in this big rug, and her toys would be right there, and the next thing you know, they're gone. and they would disappear and then show up again a couple of days later. At one point, had checked out a library book for a little picture book at the library, and the book just vanished. I mean, had to take all the other books back and had to go into the library and say, you know, hey, and listen, I'm really sorry. You know,
a ghost stole my book. Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
How did they do it then?
Yeah, and of course, you know, if they know who I am, they probably go, oh, yeah, I could see why that would happen. But the weird thing was, came home from the library, and there was the book.
Huh.
So I took the book back to the library, and there was no record that I had ever checked it out, which was kind of weird in itself, you know. But this stuff would happen. A lot of times the toys would just start up and play by themselves.
Are you sure you're just not having blacking out moments when you're taking things and then forgetting where you put them?
Yeah, I don't think so. It was very, I mean, it wouldn't have been so strange if I hadn't actually seen the toys working on their own. Like,
we'll
would be home alone with her and she would go to bed. The toy would be sitting on the floor and all of a sudden, like, the balls. It was just like this thing you shoved a ball on the top of it and spin around and around and come out the end. And the balls just started working their way through and shooting across the floor, and I thought, okay, that's it.
Wow.
You know, that's enough. You know, so it was a little strange. So,
all right. Well, for everybody that's just tuning in, we're talking to Troy Taylor. Troy is an author. He's a paranormal investigator, Chippendale's dancer. He does it all. And Troy's going to be back with us in a few minutes to talk to us more about his paranormal adventures and some of the books that he has out there. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. We'll be back with more right after this.
The New York Times has raved about the show. The Star Tribune says it's paranormally funny. And the Biscayne Bugle said, how could they put this crap on the air and live with themselves?
I am so, so sorry for everything that has happened. Because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault. Because it was my project. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up.
Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
In the Amityville Horror, a ghost told them to get out the house. White people stayed in there. Now that's a hint and a half for your a ghost say get the out, I would just tip the out the door. They walked and looked in the toilet bowl with blood in the toilet.
I said, that's peculiar.
I would have been in the house and said, oh, baby, this is beautiful. We got a chandelier hanging up here, kids outside playing. It's a beautiful neighborhood. We ain't got nothing to wear. I really love them. This is really nice. Too bad we can't stay, baby.
We're the type of guys who would have stayed just for the extra company. Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town paranormal radio show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening is Mr. Troy Taylor. Troy is an author. He's a paranormal investigator. He's a tour operator. And you can look up all the information on Mr. Taylor here by going by his website, which is prairieghosts.com. And check out his website. We'll also have a link up on our site. You can just go in and click Troy's picture. It'll take you directly to his website. You can see all the great information on how to order his books, how to attend his lectures, how to attend his tours. Everything is right there, concise for you, so make sure to check it out. Troy, you've been doing paranormal investigating now for how long?
21 years. Wow. Yeah, since 85. So
we always like to kind of scare the hell out of people before bedtime here.
Yeah.
So you've got about 12 minutes left in the show. Can you tell us what are some of the creepiest things that have happened to you, or what are the weirdest things you've seen while doing investigations?
Actually, there's, you know, people always, that's a question that people always ask, you know, where,
I know,
you know,
we're
what's
not
the
very
most
original.
Common place? No, 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 I didn't mean it like that. I didn't mean you guys were stale. I just meant that people, and it's why I have to think about it a lot, because there are probably, you know, I mean, there are lots of places I've been, you know, lots of places I've gone to and done investigations, but there's three places that stand out for me as the most haunted places I've ever seen or ever been to because of the things that happen. Earlier we talked about, we were talking about David Rodriguez with Prism, and I would say that the Villisca Axe Murder House. I take tour groups there about twice a year. Is on my list of the most haunted places. And if you just, in a nutshell, and it's a long story, and I won't tell you the whole thing, but there was several murders that occurred one night in June in 1912. There was a family who was living in this little town in the southwest Iowa. It's the middle of nowhere, and were murdered in their beds. It was never solved. To this day, you know, everybody's got their theory, but nobody knows who really did it. And the house is a little house on the edge of town. It's very creepy. The owners have actually, they've restored it back to how it was at the time of the murders. There's no electricity in the house, no running water. And just about every time I've been there, not every time, but several times I've been here, we've had a lot of stuff happen we can't explain. When I was there with David, we had videotaped actually the closet door upstairs opening and closing by itself. Pretty much on command. There was a woman who was with us that night, would ask this door to close, and it would close. It would just swing shut. If nobody asked, the door would stay open or shut, depending on how it was. That was interesting. Even the last time we were there, I was there just earlier, at the end of July, mm-hmm. and we did a more technical investigation with a lot of equipment set up, and that was odd because we had a lot of things that were going on that we were picking up with equipment that we were, temperature changes, and, we were using our tri-field, natural EM meters, picking up a lot of activity in the house, and only in certain parts of the house. And again, no pipes, no electricity, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And there was definitely something going on. We didn't see anything. We did get some recordings. One of the ladies who was with us had some very strange recordings that night, voices on the tape. That place is one of the creepiest places I've ever been. Wow. If you ever get a chance to go, and like I said, we go there about twice a year. We always offer it through the website. If you get a chance to go, you got to go. It's just one of those things that I just highly recommend to people if you really want to go someplace active.
And you say that is haunted in your professional opinion.
Man.
You believe
it is
haunted.
Absolutely.
Leah from the boards wants to know, what's the deal with the pantry?
Well, you know what? That's interesting because a lot of people talk about going into the pantry there and getting like vertigo or a lot of equipment. You know, every time I've been there, we haven't gotten any kind of readings in there. And I don't know why, if it's just off when we're there, but we did take a level with us just to kind of see if something about the floor.
Sure.
It does have a slant to it. I don't know if that maybe could cause the weird feelings that people feel in there, but I don't know. That pantry was always a pantry. When they modernized the house, they turned it into a bathroom. But during the days when it was, and there are, again, a lot of theories. Some people, maybe the killer hid in the pantry or hid in the attic. That's not my personal opinion. Studying the case, the newspaper reports, and the crime reports from it, I honestly think the killer came in through the front door. And I really think that he went upstairs first because he was after the father, J.B. Moore, was the main target. Killed him first, killed his wife who was in bed next to him, then went into the children's room because I'm sure they heard something going on. They started stirring. He killed all the children, came downstairs, and then realized that two little neighbor girls were visiting. They were staying over and were in the guest room downstairs. And I think that he chased at least one of them, was hiding in a closet, because there's a closet underneath the stairs in the guest room that whenever I've been there, that's where we've had most of the activity. And I think it's a more almost like a traumatic impression kind of thing. But I really do think the house is haunted. I mean, I really do think it is.
Okay. What was your second place, did you say that?
The Bellwitch Cave in Tennessee.
Okay.
Is really honestly number one on my list. I left the other place for last because I saw a ghost there and scared the crap out of me. But the Bellwitch Cave is a very, very active location. Again, short story. If you know the story of the Bellwitch, if you don't know it, yeah, buy my book. But if you know just the nutshell of the story, that a lot of people in Robertson County, Tennessee, believe that the Bellwitch went into the cave when she left the Bell family. And that's why it's so haunted. It really doesn't figure much into the actual story. It is mentioned a couple of times, there was an encounter with the witch or the ghost in the cave, but it's been after in the years that have followed that it's been a lot of really weird activity. I think the cave is so haunted because directly above the mouth of the cave into the bluff is an Indian burial ground, and I think it's all connected. But there is a lot of activity in the cave. I was there. I've spent the night in the cave several years ago. Was there filming for a television show, and we actually spent the night in the cave. And that's one of the few places that I've ever been where I really walked into the back of the cave by myself and was back there and thought, okay, it's time to get the hell out of here. And I've never had that feeling before. I mean, I am as psychic as a doorknob. I am not in any way psychic. But right. Sometimes you can't help it. Sometimes you just get a vibe.
Yeah, no doubt.
And man, I had it that time because it sent me out of there by myself. But based on things that I've recorded there, photographs especially that have been taken at the cave, there's a collection of photographs the owner of the cave keeps that people have taken there and have sent to her, and that honestly. It's a book of photos. I mean, some of them I look at and go, oh, well, I know what that is. That's lens flare or whatever. But there are some of them that are just so bizarre that there's nothing like it. Picture of two girls sitting outside of the mouth of the cave. One girl looks sort of normal in the picture, except it's blurry. The girl who was sitting next to her on the rock, when the foot picture was developed, is now hovering in the air upside down. Now, I can't explain this. I have no way to explain it. To make matters even stranger is the girl who is sitting next to her, who looks normal, has a three-legged snake crawling up her leg. Now,
oh my God!
Yeah, I mean, and of course, obviously, completely oblivious to it because the snake is somehow ended up in the developed photograph, and as did her friend, who is now hovering in the air upside down.
And was her friend there with her?
Yeah, the two girls were sitting there on this rock next to each
other.
Unreal. There's another photograph that a school trip that came to the cave, eighth grade class, and they had their photograph taken there at the cave. And they took the photos home, they developed them. Teacher looks at it and goes, what in the world? And sent them a copy. Because there is one kid who was there on the trip, and you can see his friend sitting next to him with his arm around his shoulders. You can see where the material in the arm that's outstretched around the boy's shoulders is pressed down where somebody is sitting there. The boy is not in the picture. He's just disappeared. I mean, there's a blank spot where the boy should be.
Crazy.
And I always think, what happened to the kid? But apparently nothing. But, that's the way my mind thinks. But it's a very strange place. But the only place not the only place I've ever seen one, but I've only ever seen two ghosts in my entire life.
Okay.
But
we only have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes here. I'm sorry. So go ahead and
give us
a good
one. No, that's okay. I'll tell it
fast. Sure.
Only full-blown apparition I've seen, a ghost that actually looked like a person, was at the Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. At the time it happened, myself and Keith Age, we were the only people in the building. And we were walking down a hallway on the fourth floor, and a man walked across the hallway in front of us wearing a long white coat, like a lab coat. And it's so real that we really thought somebody was in the building. Went down to the room to tell him, hey, you can't be in here, and the room's empty. There's no way in or out. That was the first time I ever saw like a full-fledged apparition. And I have, ever since that time, and I've been there for lots of different things, and I've had several different weird experiences there, but the sanatorium is, again, a very haunted place. I mean, one I can vouch for. Not just stories, but really a haunted spot.
Yeah, we're actually going to try to get a trip out there with our guests, listeners, so we can head out and check it out.
I think you'll enjoy it. It's definitely worth seeing. Yeah, it really is.
Hey, real quick, we've got one question here for you. You mentioned earlier that you had a bunch of mistakes that you've made. Can you just tell us what are a couple of the biggest mistakes you used to make when you started doing it? And
we'll
play that through to the theme.
Not talking to people long enough over the phone before running out to their house to see where their ghost was. Like the woman who had the ghostly footsteps that showed up every night at the same time on her upstairs hall. We did two investigations with cameras and equipment, and at one point even like dusted her entire hallway thinking we would get phantom footprints on it. Well, it turned out that the time that the ghost was appearing was the same time that her daughter was going to bed every night and would flush the toilet downstairs, and the pipes underneath the floor would bang all the way down the hallway, and it sounded just like footsteps. That's one of my favorite stories, actually.
Good deal.
Or the night I sat all night long waiting for the ghost to walk in someone's attic and found out that it was infested with raccoons. So,
but they were paranormal raccoons.
Right, they were very ghostly raccoons. But
well, Troy,
yeah.
I can't thank you enough for joining us
Absolutely.
Tonight. Well, we'd love to have you back on, and we'll look forward to doing a trip with you in the future.
Sounds good.
And we thank you very much for the time that you spent with us. For everybody that's interested in more information on Troy Taylor, you can check out the link on our site by going and clicking his picture, or you can go directly to prairieghosts.com or weirdchicago.com to learn more about his trips. I look forward to talking to you again here in the future, Troy. Keep up with the great books. I appreciate them. We'll be back with more of the darkness in the afterworld. What am I saying? We'll be back with more of Darkness on the Edge of Town with our next guests right after this.